Welcome to the Audible presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. And Bruce, we want to get to some really good emails this week. I just wanted to bring on people who may have remembered last year. So John Hayes, our producer, is a Penn State alum.
Does this, by the way, make him, Stu? Usually we refer to whoever comes on as a special guest. Let's call John an unspecial guest for
now. Ouch.
Proceed to bring him on for the purpose you're proceeding to bring him on.
He's usually listening in anyway, but so John's Penn State alum, and I remember last year when James Franklin got his big contract, we talked about it on here, and John came on, and he was not happy about it, right? Not happy about the direction of the program, et cetera, et cetera. So John was at the Penn State Auburn game. He drove there, and we talked about it on Sunday. That was an impressive performance by the Nittany Lions. It's got people talking about whether they might even be a dark horse playoff team. So, I mean, John, you tell us, like, how are you feeling about things right now?
Well, I'm feeling fantastic considering any time a Big Ten team goes down to an SEC stadium and wins 41-12, it's a nice banner in the facility for any Big Ten program. But yeah, if you guys want me to eat crow, it's not going to happen today. You know, all I'll say this is, congratulations, Penn State beat Purdue on the road on the final drive. You know, Purdue is not the Ohio State Buckeyes, not the Michigan Wolverines, not Michigan State. That's a game that Penn State should win every season. They beat Ohio at home. And yeah, they trounced over an Auburn team that I've heard people talk about for the last 6 months as being a team that's completely in disarray. So while I'm impressed with the 3-0 start and I'm daring to dream about a 5-0 start, considering they're playing Central Michigan, they're playing Northwestern, and then they've got to go on the road at Michigan October 15th. If Penn State wins that game against Michigan on October 15th, I will say that I was way out of line saying that James Franklin was not somebody who could lead this program for the next 10 seasons. That would be, in my opinion, his best win as a Penn State head coach. And then he's got Ohio State at home.
Even bigger than beating Ohio State the year they won the Big Ten championship?
Problem with winning that Big Ten championship, Bruce, is that it left a salty taste in everybody's mouth because Ohio State still went to the playoff that year, not Penn State.
But, you know, I would argue that was the – because going into that game, I felt like, just remembering it, there were a lot of people like, yeah, this isn't going great or whatever. And then all of a sudden it flipped everything. So I don't think we're anywhere near here without that. I don't disagree with some of what you said. I mean, to get to that point, I think that, you know, beating Michigan would be a big statement win. How do you feel? I know you're not a huge fan of Sean Clifford. You guys are about the same age. You probably went to orientation with him. How do you feel about him now? He's played pretty well when he's been in the game.
The difference in play on Saturday, Bruce, was quarterback play. Like, there was no doubt about it that Clifford managed the game well, and he ran the offense to perfection. It's his second year in the system, and I expected to see Drew Aller at some point on Saturday, but it was actually Auburn who was flip-flopping their quarterback situation. It was Auburn that looked like the team without a quarterback, not Penn State. So I've got to say, there's no doubt that Sean Clifford has stepped up his game so far this year. He's probably heard all the noise, right? It's impossible not to hear all the noise. If you're an upperclassman, you know what people have been talking about. Sixth year in the program, the reason why you're there is because you're not good enough to leave. There's no way he hasn't heard all of that. And I do want to go back to something that I did say positively about James Franklin, and I think that the reason why this team has been playing well this year, I called him the best recruiter in Penn State history. Now, you're not going up against a lot of guys in that conversation, but at the same time, think about the five-star freshman at the running back position, Singleton. Like, he's made a huge difference for this squad. And thinking about the future of the squad with Drew Aller, all of a sudden, Franklin has short-term success and potential long-term success. He's flipped the script in 3 weeks, right? I'll tell you guys that. But there's a world where in 5 weeks from now, we have the same conversation and they still can't beat Michigan, still can't beat Ohio State, and struggle down the stretch and end up with a 9-3 record, which isn't terrible, but it'd be nice to get 10.
John, can you be perfectly honest with what I'm about to say?
Yes.
There's a world, and you just laid it out. Are you more comfortable living in that world than the one Stu is trying to take you to?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a miserable fan existence where anything short of you know, national title type relevance, you're not happy with.
Well, when you have to live in Ohio State's shadow 365 days a year, that sort of thing weighs on you, guys. Like, you know, all you hear about all offseason is Ryan Day, Ohio State, best team in the country, going to win the national championship. Penn State doesn't get mentioned except for in a negative light about their six-year quarterback who can't play. So, I won't lie to you guys. I'm daring to dream, right? Like that would be the phrase that I use. Like, if I'm gonna dream about Penn State having a great year, I'm gonna dare to dream. I'm gonna dare to dream that that whiteout against Ohio State on Halloween weekend is gonna be the best environment in college football, and Penn State pulls the upset, and there'll be nobody happier that night than me. Like, truthfully. But it's just so hard after so many years. When the difference is, right, when you think about, when you talk about Auburn, right? And I would consider myself an Auburn fan as well. You know, my wife went to Auburn. I've been to more Auburn games in the last 5 years than I had Penn State. You know, they call Auburn Alabama's little brother. They live in Alabama's shadow. The difference with Auburn is they'll have years where they go out there. They win national championships. They play for national championships in the last 10, 12 years. Penn State hasn't had that. They're living in Ohio State's shadow. They're the team that's been to the playoff. They're the team that's won the national championship, and we haven't had a chance to do that. So at some point, I would love to compete with them on a regular basis, but I know that's difficult to do, difficult to get out of their shadow. That's why when Michigan beat Ohio State at home last year, you know, Penn State fans looked at that, and then they go to the playoff. Man, that's what we want to do. And Michigan's now doing that, not us. The Big Ten East is a really tough division.
All right. Well, we wish you luck. Yeah. I mean, you know, good luck. You know, we feel for you. Like, you know, you have our best wishes. You know, having to deal with these 9-3 seasons, we're just so, our sympathy goes out to you. And
yeah. I appreciate you guys like leading the show today with my hot takes, which I'm sure nobody listening to the show wants to hear any more about. But they do want to hear about, and I want to hear more about, this five-star prospect from Georgia. I know you guys have worked on this incredible story about T.A. Cunningham and his father, Terrence Cunningham. It's made the rounds this week, is one of those stories that pops and makes you realize how crazy college football has become in the NIL era. Can you guys fill me in on how this came about and all the little dirty details around this recruiting story that's absolutely wild?
Yeah. So first of all, you know, thank you for being interested in it. Myself, Bruce, and Andy Staples teamed up on it. We worked really hard on it. You know, came together fairly quickly last week. We hope people go to The Athletic and read the full story, obviously. The quick synopsis: T.A. Cunningham, highest rated defensive lineman in the 2024 class, from Atlanta. All of a sudden this summer, though, he moved to California with his little brother. And the primary reason is that California, you can make NIL money in high school. In Georgia, you cannot. So in the story, we detail both his father's, you know, kind of obsession, if you will, with making that money. He and his family, unfortunately, have been evicted recently. And then all of the various players in the NIL space who tried to cash in on this kid. And unfortunately, the end result is he has no NIL money. He's technically considered homeless because his family's back in Atlanta and he doesn't have a permanent residence. And right now he's ineligible to play high school football at his new school, Los Alamitos, as they investigate whether he was basically recruited to go there. So I just think it's, you know, I've heard from a lot of people, I'm sure you have too, Bruce, and everybody's like, this is so sad. You know, what a sad situation. It's kind of the, while we both obviously support NIL and the athletes' ability to make money, unfortunately, the reality is there's kids that are getting taken advantage of, who are getting bad advice. And this is a particularly extreme case.
Yeah. One of the things that has come out of this, Stu, I've noticed is I've heard from people who work in college athletics, and they, you know, I feel like this maybe is a bigger inside baseball story than maybe, you know, maybe it's a little harder for people. You know, when we say the names, you know, Mike Castino or Justin Giangrande or Darren Heitner, I'm not sure how much they mean to most big football fans. You have to really follow recruiting. I mean, plus all three of those guys were non-factors or really non-entities. Darren Heitner was on social media, and you'd hear him kind of almost looking for a platform to be attached to over the last decade. But Mike Castino came out of nowhere and did a huge deal for Nico, got him millions of dollars to go to Tennessee. And then he was attached to Jaden Rashada, and he's definitely a character that, you know, you talk to people around college athletics on the football side, they don't have a lot of favorable things to say about how he operates. And you hear similar about some of these other characters. And the more that we've gotten, you know, since the stories come out, I've heard from people who are like, hey, can we talk to you? Can I talk to you a little about this? Because these guys are trying to get close to a lot of student athletes, and they're leveraging people. And I think that that's a little different than what it, you know, this is kind of the underbelly of the NIL world that has come out. And when you have some of these characters, and again, a couple of these guys are lawyers, and they are standing to make a lot of money jumping into this void that's right now with NIL. And so we got in that story. I think what was interesting to me, certainly as we started working on it, was knowing a little bit about both of those guys. Heitner and Castino are on opposite sides of the country. They're both attorneys. As I said, neither one really had much of a presence in the college football world until this. And they have this feud that flares up at times on social media. And I feel like to a large degree, this thing got in the middle of that feud, which, you know, in our reporting definitely escalated from what we saw. And I think that is a big part of this story too. And again, 17-year-old T.A. Cunningham is caught in the middle of all of it. And that's the part that is, I think, you know, people need to stay on and circle on, because, you know, as Andy, you know, pointed out to us in the story, you know, this is the first lawsuit of this kind, but there's probably going to be a lot more coming down the pipeline.
The lawsuit, by the way, actually is not against any of the people you just mentioned. Castino is actually representing him in the lawsuit. It is against CIF, the federation that runs California high school athletics, who's ruled him ineligible. And by the way, we haven't, you know, you just mentioned all these names, and we didn't even get to Coach Frog, the trainer in California, who has trained Bryce Young, DJ Uiagalelei, many prominent players. And he was teamed with Justin Giangrande, that agent. And so when Big Rev, as TA's dad calls himself, sent his son 2,000 miles away, that was who took him in initially. And last month, he was arrested on some very disturbing charges. And then once we found out about, you know, as soon as that came out that he'd been arrested, it came out that way back in 2010, this guy who's had all this access to, I mean, he coaches middle schoolers, he's coached these guys we talked about. Now he's coaching the Cunningham brothers, in 2010, went on trial for, kidnapping charges, and raping an intoxicated woman. So the fact that he was able to get this close to these guys, that, I mean, he took T.A. Cunningham on recruiting visits this summer, and now he's arrested. So just very disturbing. I hope people will read it. And obviously, this is not the end of the story. We're going to find out soon if he's going to be ruled eligible or not. You know, as you these figures that you mentioned are not going away. And, you know, just in the last couple of days, I've had people texting about all these other schemers, if you will, who are trying to get their hands on the NIL space. I think because it's new and nobody, you know, it's kind of being invented on the fly. Anybody and everyone is trying to cash in. And I don't, from what I can tell, none of them really have the best interests of the players in mind.
Back to the podcast in a second, but Bruce, even this late into the spring, you know, we're still seeing college football programs hiring staff members, support staff members, analysts, GAs, whatnot. Hope they've been using LinkedIn Jobs, because if you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to post your job for free at linkedin.com/audible. That's linkedin.com/audible to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
In terms of college football, actual college football going on right now, I think the best way to get into that is the mailbag.
As always, send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. The first question, Stu, I don't know if this is the first one you want to answer, but it's the first one I'm going to ask you, is from Brandon Newkirk in Gloucester, Virginia. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Good morning, Bruce and Stu. Many, maybe most, if not all, SEC schools are willing to fire head coaches very early in their tenures, regardless of the buyout amount. Some are even willing to damage the reputation of the institution to get rid of the coach. See Tennessee and Auburn. Conversely, most would agree USC, Nebraska, and Arizona State all recently waited too long to make a change. What is the right answer? That's a good question.
It is a good question. And I think, look, I don't think you can group it all. I think each situation is a little bit different, but he is right in that I think we knew, you know, certainly with USC, you knew several years ahead of time, and with Nebraska and ASU, certainly by last year, that those coaches, Clay Helton, Scott Frost, and Herm Edwards are not the answer. And so the reason they're now getting fired 2-3 games into a season is because you've already delayed it so much to begin with. As we get more and more into this trend of firing coaches early, you start to realize it's not about getting a jump start on the process. It's frankly, you could wait another month and it wouldn't make that much of a difference. It's that the fan base was already pretty much given up on them. You give them one more chance and Herm Edwards loses to Eastern Michigan and whatnot. And like, you gotta stop the bleeding. You know, you can't keep dragging this out. So I will give some credit in this situation to, like, a lot of the, you know, he's mentioning Tennessee, Auburn, SEC schools where they're just, the buyout is no obstacle. They just do it. But you had a situation in the Pac-12 last year with Jimmy Lake, where, you know, Jen Cohen, the AD, fired him in his second season, but the first season was only 4 games. So
he was 3-1 in the first 4 games.
Yeah. So from the outside, like, Clay Helton and these other people were given way more of a chance to right the ship than he was. But, you know, she realized it wasn't working out. And so she went ahead and cut bait. And I know it's early, but Kalen DeBoer seems to be an answer. So I'm not advocating for firing coaches early. I think it's more like if you already know it's inevitable, you got to just pull the trigger.
Well, look, a couple of these situations, there's three right now that are really hot seats now that certainly Herm is out at ASU, and that's Auburn. Brian Harsin hasn't been there very long. I don't think he's going to be much longer. You know, if they lose to Missouri this weekend, I would suspect they'll probably pull the plug right then and there. If not, I would suspect they do it within a month. Colorado, they're basically, Rick George put out a statement, the AD. I think they're just looking to see if they can raise money to, they feel like that's not working out with Carl Durrell. And then Jeff Collins, I think it's only maybe even a matter of days, but the thing that's complicated that a little bit is the AD is also really on the hot seat at Georgia Tech. So, you know, those are three Power Five schools. And like, those are the ones. Once you get past those three, I'm not sure which is like something that is as scorching hot. But I mean, I feel like those things, I don't want to use the word imminent, but they're close to happening. And I would be surprised if any of those three coaches made it to Halloween.
Wow.
You know, so.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be that you know, even if things were looking bad, you waited till the end of the season. Obviously those days are gone. Gosh, I remember this never happens anymore, but when Jeremy Foley fired Ron's, no, that's not a good example. Yes, that is a good example. Correct me if I'm wrong. When Jeremy Foley fired Ron Zook like 7 or 8 games into the season, he still let him coach the rest of the season. You know, now it's like as soon as they're fired, they're gone. They're never heard from again. But yeah, it was not uncommon back then to just say, okay, he's going to be fired at the end of the season, but he's going to coach the rest of the year.
Look, I mean, LSU did that last year with that Ogeron. He didn't coach the bowl game.
Yeah.
Coached, you know, I think the thing there was, you know, he had a win over Florida. And then I think the feeling was we made up our mind. We do not want him rallying the team. And then all of a sudden it's awkward.
And if we're being honest, Scott Woodward had made up his mind on Ed Ogeron.
Scott Woodward well made before. Yeah, I think he made up his mind before they even opened the season last.
You mentioned real quick how the Georgia Tech AD Todd Stansberry might be in trouble too. I don't understand, you know. I don't understand. So like USC, you know, a new AD came in. What the AD who hired Clay Helton wasn't the one who had to decide whether to fire him. But Trev Alberts is relatively new at Nebraska. But Ray Anderson, the ASU AD, is the one who hired Herm Edwards in the first place, despite the fact he had no college coaching experience and had been out of coaching altogether for years. You mentioned Carl Durrell. Rick George is the one who... Now, granted, Mel Tucker left in February, so maybe they felt like their options were limited, but hired Carl Durrell, who was a big disappointment at UCLA and hadn't been back in college since, and gave him a guaranteed contract that they're now going to have to try to get out of. And, you know, shouldn't the AD, I'm not fire everybody kind of thing, but in those situations, the ADs are as culpable as the coaches.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, Rick George was a candidate for the Big 12 commissioner job, not, you know, a couple of months ago. Obviously it didn't end up they went to somebody else. But yeah, I thought that was a really curious hire when they made it.
It was bizarre. The biggest reason, like we say, okay, why Carl Durrell to Colorado? Cause he lives near there because he had a house near Boulder and he was already there. So
I mean, of those three we mentioned, Stu, you have Herm. Obviously, we were both kind of shocked when they hired him. Mm-hmm. I had Carl Durrell. We were both pretty stunned when they hired him. You have Brian Harsin, who honestly, I think I was pretty surprised. I was like, that seems like a really odd fit.
Yep.
You know, like those are Jeff Collins. I didn't dislike that hire because I think he had a lot of energy. He's a really good recruiter. He's a creative thinker. He had ties to the area. That one, I'm not saying I expected him to go in there and turn out to be Dave Aranda or something, but it just hasn't worked.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's plenty of times when we all think they made a school made a great hire and it doesn't work out. And Scott Frost would be a great example of that. But 9 times out of 10, when everybody on the outside is like, yeah, I don't get that. That's a really weird hire. Les Miles at Kansas being one recently. It ends up being exactly
as like you said, Kansas.
Yeah, it doesn't. And it makes you wonder, like, how can the, if it's so obvious to us sports writers who aren't, you know, in it, how do these ADs, this is their job, how do they screw it up so badly? I don't, and there are exceptions. I think people, you know, the most famous one being, you know, everybody was pretty down on the Pete Carroll hire at USC, and that worked out pretty well. There have been exceptions like that. I get a lot of flack to this day. Every time Arkansas wins a big game, people recirculate my tweet where I panned that hire at the time. He's obviously been great. So I'm not saying we hit a home run, but like some of these really, really, like, does anybody really expect when they hired Carl Durrell that he was going to lead Colorado to glory? I mean,
I feel like we're more likely to get the zinger right than we are. Like, to me, the good example,
Steve Adazio.
Yeah, Steve Adazio to Colorado State was a disastrous hire that almost anybody could see that coming. The hire that, like, I'll be honest, that I did not think was going to work out as well as it did, and it's because of a short sample size at Ohio State, was Luke Fickell. I mean, that's been a tremendous hire for them. What was the one you just mentioned a bit ago? Not Pete Carroll. In between, there was a hire. Oh, Sam Pittman. I'm surprised. I'm not. I didn't think. I don't know if I thought he was going to be a disaster. I didn't think he would be this good. And so
Sam Pittman is an example of clearly the AD shut out, you know, outside perspectives and didn't get, because a lot of the ones we're talking about is clearly like these ADs, they have egos and they want to make a big splash, right? I mean, Ray Anderson was Herm Edwards' agent when he was an NFL coach. I'm sure who I can't even remember now. There's been so many Kansas ADs. Which one hired Charlie Weiss? But I'm sure he looked at it as like,
it was Shannon Zinger or Zager.
Yeah. He's probably like, look, we got the former Notre Dame coach. This is great. Sam Pittman, completely under the radar, no profile, but clearly, you know, they saw something in him. Mel Tucker. I mean, give the same AD who I just ripped for Carl Durrell, give him credit for identifying Mel Tucker.
By the way, Bill Fulmer had the choice between Mel Tucker and Justin Pruitt.
Jeremy Pruitt.
Who's Justin Pruitt? Where did that come from? So had the choice between those two, and he definitely picked the wrong door.
It's
the one thing that you said, and it kind of reminds me, I feel like we tend to be wrong most when we go on short sample size.
Mm-hmm.
Anything.
Tom Herman, two
seasons. Scott Frost, two seasons. Jimmy Lake, no.
I actually didn't remember Jeff Collins was a two-season guy at Temple.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, so it's the short sample size or it's a first-time head coach. Those are the ones where they're learning on the job, you know, where I feel like it's less likely, you know, there's definitely more risk there, right? So I don't know. The jury's still out on some of these, but
yeah, let me move to John Treat from Brooklyn, New York. Hey guys, I know the conference likely doesn't have the top end national title contender that other conferences do, Ohio State, Michigan, et cetera. But is it reasonable to say that the Pac-12 is the second best conference in the country this year? They have USC, Utah, Oregon, and Washington at the top, and solid teams like Oregon State, UCLA, Arizona, who would have thought they'd be mentioned as a solid team, but they've got two good wins. And Washington State. I had a stat in the mailbag yesterday that the Pac-12 has three non-conference wins over top 25 teams, and that is their most through week three since 2012. So I definitely think that they are off to a better start than usual. But second best conference, let's think about that. He's basically, I assume the first best is the SEC. So he's suggesting the Pac-12 is a better conference this year than the Big Ten, for one.
It's an interesting point, because if you look, now obviously there's no divisions of the Pac-12 this year. The Big Ten still has divisions still. And you look at that, we talked about this the other day, the Big Ten East, everybody but Michigan State is 3-0. Michigan hasn't played anybody, but they've been impressive as you can be playing with no one. You know, Ohio State, I think, is still is pretty much Ohio State. I know they struggle with what now looks like a not so good Notre Dame team. But after that, I mean, Penn State, nice win. I mean, John Hayes just we talked way too much about Penn State there with John about the reasons for skepticism on their start. So let's talk about the Pac-12. USC really hasn't played anybody either, but I mean, Stanford is okay. Fresno State, Jake Haner got hurt. Then it was Rice. They've been about as impressive offensively as you can be, given they played nobody. Oregon State, like what we've seen from Jonathan Smith. You say he's 3-0, but they haven't played anybody, and they struggled with South Alabama last year.
They have not been a particularly impressive 3-0.
No. Washington has been impressive. I mean, I talked to Kalen DeBoer yesterday for a while. I'm not ready to say that they're going to be a playoff team, but right now, Michael Penix Jr. is playing really well. They have really good receivers. They have a pretty good offensive line. They seem to have their mojo back. They're interesting. Washington State, good win at Wisconsin. And as you said, Arizona, I know they lost to Mississippi State at home, but that's a good team they just beat the other day. And it's in North Dakota State. And so you look at this group here, and you know, we're talking about Oregon, who got embarrassed week one, but has bounced back and got, you know, helped the Pac-12 a lot by beating BYU. So if I look at all this, we haven't even mentioned Utah, right? So I'm not ready to say the top, like if you just kind of rattle off, all right, who are the top four teams in the Pac-12 right now? I don't know if you can put Oregon and Utah in there just because they both have a loss, but you match them up with the top four of the Big Ten. I feel like they matched up pretty well. I don't know who's beating Ohio State.
Yeah, I don't think they have an Ohio State in their conference.
But like, I mean, right now, Washington has been as impressive as, I mean, I don't know, Washington at Michigan on a neutral field. I would probably pick Michigan, but I'm not like after last week, I'm not that sure. Like, again, Michigan hasn't played anybody yet.
One of the tough things about these comparisons is obviously the Big Ten's a bigger conference. I think so. I just looked at the Sagarin ratings. Granted, they're not, you know, through three games that can be a little bit deceiving data, but they've got four Pac-12 teams in the top 15 and six in the top 40. Big Ten, four in the top 15, eight in the top 40. take that for what it with a bit of a grain of salt. You has ranked number 32 in the Sagarin ratings is the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Also, keep in mind that there's more teams that we're working out too.
I'm going to say not better than the Big Ten, but certainly a strong number three right now.
Closed.
Yeah, but I'm also not going to throw out the Big 12 just yet. Big 12 teams just don't play good non-conference schedules like the Pac-12 does, so it's hard to it's often hard to get a good read. Now, obviously, Oklahoma. You schedule Nebraska, you think they're going to be better than that. Texas played Alabama, but I just don't have a great sense of how. I think there are a lot of strong teams in the Big 12. I don't have a sense of kind of how they stack up relative to the best teams in other conferences.
I also think as it relates to the Pac-12, I don't know how much more juice they're going to get in this discussion because the one game that typically would be an out-of-conference game that people will give some credence to is Notre Dame-USC. Right now, you know, Notre Dame, what are they going to be, a 6 or 7-win team this year, it feels like? I don't know. You're not going to get much of a boost. You're not going to get really any boost if you win that game now that Marshall beat them at home. You know, unless they go on this roll with a backup quarterback and come into that game at 9-2. I just don't see a lot of opportunities here for them to really cash in on the expectation of how much better is the Pac-12, because I think they're going to be playing each other now.
We're very popular in Brooklyn this week, Bruce. You want to read the next one?
This is from Curie H. in Brooklyn, New York. I know Michigan State ran into a buzzsaw and were probably overranked, but unlike many who said that the game, quote, wasn't as close to the final score, I actually thought Sparty played hard to the final whistle. Their fourth quarter goal line stand wasn't something you see from a team down big on the road. Peyton Thorne is no CJ Stroud, but he left it all on the field and got his team to 11 points down within 4 minutes to go. The silver lining to missing Jaden Reed may have been the Michigan State offense finding out how good Keon Coleman really is. Going out on a limb and saying they will upset one of the Big Ten teams ranked ahead of them in the AP this week. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to rule out Michigan State. I mean, they that's a, you know, tough game going on the road. Washington's clearly better than we thought. I will say that, obviously, Kenneth Walker was such a huge part of Michigan State's success last year. They got two good transfers in Jalen Berger and Jarek Broussard, but I don't think they're Kenneth Walker. And you wonder how much of Peyton Thorne's success last year was the fact that defenses had to key on Kenneth Walker. So, they overachieved last year, Michigan State. I mean, they won 11 games. They won a New Year's Six Bowl. And I don't know that anybody thought they were quite there last year yet, going into year two. So I wonder if we're going to see a little bit of a regression to the mean this year. But, you know, I don't come away from it like, oh, Michigan State's terrible. They're going to go 4-8. I just don't think they're going to be a New Year's Six team.
If we put the over-under on wins at 8.5 for the year right now, would you take the over?
No, I'd take the under because I haven't looked at their schedule, but I know they're going to play Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan. So, you know, I think best case scenario, they win one of those three.
And what do you think? Those three games are on the road, and the one that's home is Ohio State. The other thing that's a little tricky when I'm looking at it, so after this, they have Minnesota. They're not easy to play. And then they got to go to Maryland, who has a lot of firepower, and they're kind of dangerous. I mean, I don't know if they win both of those games. That doesn't include Wisconsin. And then, like, I feel like Illinois is not awful. You have, like, enough teams in there who I feel like are pretty competitive. And to me right now, the challenge for Michigan State is their defense was really shaky last year. And it got lit up the other day in Seattle. They're going to play some really explosive offenses coming up, right? And that, to me, is going to be a challenge. They got pressure in the first couple of weeks on the quarterback. They weren't able to do that last week like that. And I think when you're talking about what they're seeing now, you know, you got a really experienced quarterback in Minnesota with a great running back. You got a good quarterback and great receivers and a good running back at Maryland. Obviously, Ohio State is Ohio State. We see how explosive Michigan is. And we're not even getting into Penn State late in the year. I mean, I don't know. I think it's going to be hard for them to get to 8 wins, to be honest, this year.
Yep. So when you said, what, 8.5?
Yeah, so, I wouldn't have taken the over. I would take the under, absolutely.
I think it's more 7.5 would be the trickier one. David from Charlotte, Bruce and Stewart, with all the craziness in the first 3 weeks of the season, which Group of Five conference sets up the best to send their champion to a New Year's Six bowl game? With the future Big 12 teams from the AAC all suffering losses, does that leave room for a potential Sun Belt program or Mountain West program to make it in instead of the usual AAC champ? It's definitely been a rough start for the AAC, especially Houston, who people had a lot of high expectations for. So what do you think? Will the champs still come from the AAC, or are we looking at Fun Belt or Mountain West?
Man, you know, you obviously had App State got a big win, and Marshall got a nice win. I mean, obviously Notre Dame's not great this year, but those are really good wins. I think they're going to pluck each other off. You know, I think Coastal Carolina is the class of the league, but I don't, you know, they got to go to Marshall.
You think, you think Coastal Carolina is better than this year, better than all, yeah. I'm going to disagree with you there. They have Grayson McCall, obviously, but they lost a ton from that core that led them to so much success the last few years. And it's a tough conference. I mean, they didn't even win the conference last year, right? Louisiana has won.
You want to talk about losing a lot of guys. Lost a lot of guys, though.
Here's us, you know, I mean, here's Coastal Carolina's start so far. 38-28 over Army. 31-27 over Gardner-Webb, 38-26 over Buffalo. Thursday night game this week on a short week. What's that?
Beating Army's not a bad win. I think they have the best player in the league in their quarterback. They have two good running backs. They're gonna average probably 7 yards or 6 yards a carry just because that offense is good and those players fit. you know, App State, I think, is good. I don't think there's a huge gap with them. That's my point. To me, like, I think they're the best team in the league. But again, you know, also when they play Marshall, Marshall may have the best player in the league back by that point, Rasheen Ali, who's a great running back who's been out. So,
and, you know, so, I mean, it certainly wasn't a good sign that Louisiana lost to Rice. So, I mean, everybody's excited about the Sun Belt, and they should be. And you know, those, some of those non-conference wins are going to help the league.
But there's nobody in the AAC right now. Cincinnati got a loss. They actually struggled early on with Miami, Ohio. You know, the only one who's undefeated is Tulane, who had a nice win last week. I just don't see Tulane running the table.
Well, you don't have to be undefeated to get the New Year's Six berth. You just have to be the highest ranked conference champ. Look, there's not an obvious one out there, to say the least. I was about to say Air Force, and then I realized they lost to Wyoming last week. So, you know, Fresno State's got a couple of L's already. San Diego State, not good. Not good this year. I'm inclined to think that the team comes out of the Sun Belt. I don't know which team is going to win that conference.
You're with me. You think it could be you're on the coastal bandwagon or not?
No, I think that I'm saying the Sun Belt champ, whoever that may be, but I would lean toward App State right now. And if it is App State with a win over A&M on their resume, they probably are going to be the highest ranked group of five team. But
can I throw a wild card at you?
Go ahead. Yeah.
It's a program we've not yet talked about. They were awful when this guy took over. They were awful early on in his tenure, but they quietly got out to a pretty nice start, and that's Marcus Arroyo's UNLV Rebels.
Holy cow, that would be the story of the season if that happened.
They almost beat Cal. Doug Brumfield is putting up pretty big numbers. They blew out North Texas the other day. Now, they got to go to Utah State, who's been, you know, has been licking its wounds since playing at Alabama. But, you know, like, they've been awful for a while, and they're 2-1. And like I said, they're not far from being 3-0 with a win over a Pac-12 school.
They've been awful for a long, long time. That North Texas score definitely caught my attention. I don't think Utah State's very good this year. How about this? October.
I think they were banged up bad by the Alabama body blow thing.
How about this, Bruce? UNLV on October 22nd plays at Notre Dame. Notre Dame having some issues. What if UNLV, one of the worst teams in the country over the past several years, goes to South Bend and shocks the Irish? Then they would definitely be my pick.
Oof. Okay.
Heck, they played Cal close, and Cal played Notre Dame close. So the old transitive property game.
We have time for one more question,
Steve. Okay.
All right. This.
I like that very last one if you're thinking of one more.
Okay. This question from Gordon Cameron in Burlington, Ontario. Good day, gentlemen. Given the trend towards non-traditional hires for conference commissioners, who among college football journalists and media personalities do you think would be the best choice to be the new commissioner of the Mountain West Conference? I have a suggestion. I'm curious yours.
Who's your suggestion?
Well, my suggestion is Rod Gilmore, the lawyer from Stanford who went to Cal and Stanford, lifelong West Coast guy. I think he, you know, everything with NIL and a lot of governance issues, Rod has looked at it from all sides. I think I'm not trying to say that he's going to gobble up some other Pac-12 schools because he's a lifelong Pac-12 guy. But if you ask me one person in this space who I feel like is versed in it, again, has a legal background, has been in football, and by the way, he was a baseball player at Stanford too, he would be my top candidate.
Well, that's a very legitimate answer.
You're gonna give me some sports writer who doesn't have like ketchup on his shirt, and you're gonna feel proud of yourself. That's until I blew you out of the water with that, right?
Yeah. Well, my nominee is Ari Wasserman. I think that the Mountain West needs to be bold in this ever-changing landscape. And Ari, you know, he is not shy with his opinions. He's basically given Kenny Dillingham the Arizona State job already. He has very, very strong opinions about fast food. So yes, let's put him in charge of a college football conference. And like, he's just going to cut through the BS, and he's going to make the decisive moves that a commissioner. I was originally going to say Andy, but then I decided it would be more original to say Art.
Cut through the BS. He will sit down at the negotiating table with the bigger
with some filet-o-fish sandwiches.
And looks at him and go, how about if I drink this whole jar of pesto? How about you let us like that? It's not going to work that way, Stu.
So you're looking for a more reasoned take of somebody who could, I don't even know if the Mountain West has a TV deal coming up soon, but negotiate a TV deal, maybe think about realignment modernize NIL. Rick Rod Gilmore is a perfectly good choice. I
put no thought into this, didn't you? You put no thought into this.
Well, I didn't know you were going to give it a serious answer. I didn't seem like I didn't get the sense he was looking for a serious answer because they're not going to hire a media personality.
You wouldn't even let Ari run the fantasy draft of the Athletic college football writers if it was up to you.
Let me think.
This is a serious responsibility. Okay.
All right. I'll give you a media person who would do the job diligently and is smart. John Wilner. Now, I know John is a Pac-12 thing. You know, he's the Pac-12 guru, but there's some overlap there. Obviously, he has spent a lot of time writing and reporting about, for instance, San Diego State Pac-12 type expansion candidates. He knows the business of realignment and media deals and whatnot cold. If you're looking for the more a sports writer, but a sports writer who I think could seriously do the job, that's my nominee.
Okay. We have much respect for John Wilner. He's been in the business a long time. Now I feel like bad because you made me bash Ari.
Well, you know, he already thinks you've blacklisted him from or blackballed him from the podcast. So now you've done him no more favors, but you can send your questions to the audiblepod@gmail.com during the season. It is the focal point of our Wednesday episodes, other than when John Hayes is resigning himself to a future of nothing but Penn State Outback Bowls. We'll see you guys next time.